Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is my pleasure to be here as a guest speaker under the invitation of General Macau and the museum. I believe you have heard a lot of the air battle stories. And you know a lot of air battle stories too. But tonight, I'm going to give you a different story about the air battles or air war in Korea from a Chinese perspective. 8 years ago, actually the 10 years ago, I started my research on the air war in Korea from the communist side, not from the UN, American side. One of my research efforts is dedicated to my father. He was a PLAF officer and in the Korean War. And the photos I'm going to give to you later, and I will tell a little bit about what his crew did and in Korea. So the book published in 2002, and that is 8 years ago. And I still enjoyed very much myself in the memories of those people who helped me to write this book. At lunchtime, I talked to the researchers of the museum. And something came to my mind I want to remind you, that is, what the story I'm going to tell you may not be the true fact. Because we can't stick to the fact, and because human memories are biased. The history we try to understand, we try to learn, is perhaps it's not the facts, but just what we want to know, what we believe it is. So the people who I interviewed during my research, I never think those people are dishonest. But however, the story I tell you may be not the truth, but however, is something deeply buried in their minds as part of the history of their own. And today I'm going to go over these are the five areas which are covered in the book which I've written. And mostly I focus on the Chinese side story. And there are two chapters talk about Soviet involvement. And I won't tell you anything about that, and other than show you some slides. And if anyone wants to know what is the Russians' contribution to the air war in Korea, and I just wish you go to read my book. But I'm not trying to advertise my book, and I know the Texas A&M University Press has already happy enough for so many copies have been sold so far. I believe it's the third print and it's already tended to run out and shortly. Okay. The first thing I'm going to cover this is to talk about how the air power played a significant role in Chinese decision for intervention. It's an amazing story. And since we have a free speech, free press rights in United States, so I'm able to tell this story. And this story that have never been told in China. And second, then we'll talk about what's China's initial plan and strategy for get themselves in the air war. And then I talk about briefly about how they frustrated and try to get the plan to go. And then I talk about Chinese air operation in Korea. And finally, I try to see what the experience, lessons they learned from the Korean War, and what the implication to them or to us who won't understand the growth of a Chinese air power in today's security environment. Almost, it's actually just 1 month away. 60 years ago, the Korean War broke out. And the last week, when the war started, Joseph Stalin sent a telegram to Beijing, to Chinese leaders. Ask the Chinese leaders to prepare their military for intervention. And in that telegram, Joseph Stalin promised he would send a MiG-15 division to China immediately to provide the air cover for the Chinese forces. At that time, Chinese Air Force just created a year ago, or less than a year ago, 10 months. It only had a handful pilots, haven't started flying the MiG-15 yet. And after receiving that telegram, the Chinese leader did think about to take some advanced preparation for what so-called eventuality. One precondition is that the Chinese forces would have an air cover from Russia. So that Stalin's promise, to my study, that is one of the key reasons for early Chinese decision to prepare for possible intervention. And in August, I believe in the late August, that MiG division arrived in China. And in the meantime, Chinese moved their army troops to the borders and prepared for possible intervention. But once the situation turned around, in the September, and particularly when later, and Chinese leaders and received a telegram from Kim Il-sung on October 1st, just a few days before the fall of Pyongyang, I believe, and he urgently asked the Chinese for intervention. Because Stalin told him that is, you can't depend on us for help. You have to turn yourself to the Chinese. So after receiving the Kim Il-sung's telegram, Mao beginning to think about a serious intervention. One problem he came across at the time, that is, who will command the Chinese forces in Korea to confront UN forces. And finally, he found a general under General Peng. And he summoned him to the Beijing from far west China to commit him to the job. And one thing Maul promised him, that is, there would be an air cover from Russia. But when Peng went to the northeast China, tried to assemble the troops together, he asked the general who already in the region, and what about the cooperation between his ground troops and the air force? Nobody knows there would be an air force. So he sent a telegram back to Beijing, ask about the details, air cover issues. Is that at that moment, the Beijing realized that the air cover is a big issue for possible Chinese intervention. So they sent another telegram to Moscow, ask for details about Russian air cover. And one of the reasons, and for that, for Chinese generals urged Russian air cover, because they had tremendous experience during the Chinese Civil War in the late 1940s when they experiencing the nationalist air power. And many knows that the U.S. air power is much powerful, stronger than the national Chinese had. So when the Beijing's telegram went to the Moscow, and after Stalin made the promise, he went to his general for the consultation about how Russian Air Force can help the China. His general told him, it's a bad idea. It's a bad idea to send the Russian Air Force and to China to get involved in Korea. And at least his general told the Stalin, Joseph Stalin, that they were not ready yet. And the Stalin asked them how long they would be ready. At least 2 months and a half. So then Stalin sent the telegram that there was a problem for the Air Force air cover by Russian Air Force. So China is sent, then the Chinese sent the Premier Zhou Enlai to Moscow immediately to negotiate about Soviet air power issues. And during that negotiation, Stalin told the Tsar that his air force not ready. And his air force could only provide the air cover at this point up to the Yalu River, not cross. And that created a big problem in Beijing. Once you see the travel of a telegram back and forth, and the world carries pessimism. And when the finally, Stalin told Zhou Enlai that is, his air force would be ready only in 2 months and a half. But at this point, you have to go into the Korea alone by your ground troops. So when Maul informed his general Peng, and Maul pointed out two things. Number one, he did not believe the air power should play a significant role in war. Number two, he already made mind to send the troops because geopolitical considerations. But however, his general react differently. And General Peng almost resigned from the position. And he flew back from northeast China and to Beijing. And Mao had a different time schedule than anyone else. Mao tentatively sleep in the daytime and work at night. Right? And so the Peng returned to Beijing, and in the daytime ran into the Mao's of Mao's residence in the middle of the day, and Mao was sleeping. And woke up him and said he won't go, even without air cover. However, Mao persuade Peng that they have to go. Okay. And of course, Starling also sent a telegram convinced Mao that he have to go. They talk about if you don't go this time, you're going to lose the Taiwan forever. Some kind of argument made by Stalin. And Mao also said that is, that's what the Chinese way of thinking, and we never can think that way. One of the arguments Mao made that is, if we go in Korea, we will beat him and pushed back by UN forces. But we can still go back later. And if we don't go at this time, and we cannot get in forever. So that is argument Mao made and to General Peng and said, you have to command your troops and go in Korea. And we still expect the Soviet Union to send their air force in 2.5 months. So the hopes for the Soviet support is still there. So after the shuffle and back and forth, go and not go, and for almost a week, finally, by October 18th, the decision was hammered. The troops are going to Korea next day. So on October 19th, and the Chinese troops and crossed the Yalu River. And so that kicked off Chinese intervention in Korea, and now let's talk about China's air plan and strategy. My early slides point out that is in October 1950, China did not have a real air force. Only a handful of pilots just started flying the MiG-15 solo under Soviet, under Russian pilots' instruction. Of course, no Chinese commanders and officers have air combat experience, too. So nothing, zero. So what kind of strategy are they supposed to take? So they came out with what we call a prudent strategy. Right? Which means the accumulation of strength and concentrated employment in time and attack. Which means you cannot send your forces as a piece of the meal and into the combat. You have to train them together and use them together, what we call concentrated employment in timely attack. And then they see this should get into the air war in two stages. And first, they should rush that regiment who already flying the MiG-15s and those propeller and fighters at the time to go in and protect the transportation lines. And during this stage, it will be a learning period under the Soviet assistance. I want to point out that is, even though Stalin said his forces were not ready for intervention, but however, remember, Stalin already sent one MiG division in China at that time. But that division was responsible for defend the Chinese territory. So Yalu River is a part on their air defense mission. So that provide the Chinese a learning period to earn combat experience under the Soviet tutelage. That's why in the early November, UN pilots saw some actions in the air combat over the Yalu River. They were Russians. They were Russians. And they were assigned to China for air defense. And the second stage, that is, since Chinese learned some air doctrine influenced by the Russians, the provide ground support is a major role for the Air Force. So in order to provide ground support, they need to build the airfield inside North Korea. Otherwise, and nothing can be done and for the ground support. And once the airfield completed, the China would able to send a significant number of aircraft to commence the full-scale air war in Korea. The time set up in the spring 1951. That is also the time very close to the Russians were ready and to send their units into Korea. So that is a plan or a strategy set up for Chinese Air Force intervention or involvement. So this slide shows that the first group of flying group of the 4th Division and sent to Korea in the late December as a learning experience for them. So that you see the 8 pilots. And that's the same groups with their division commanders and on their side. And this is the first pilot who claimed to shut down an American aircraft. And in the meantime, they're supposed to build the airfields. And what the airfield is supposed to build is all the major airfield is in this area, the Anjun area. In this later, the area we know as Mid Alley, right? This airfield. I think the 4 airfields and in this area, and then maybe 2 down the Pyongyang and here. Other Pyongyang here, 2 maybe down here, and the 4 in this area. But what happened to the effort to construct the airfield? Chinese mobilized one army devoted to airfield constructions. They built the airfield at night. By daytime, they were bombed. They built again, and they bombed. And after several months, they realized that it's impossible to get that airfield serviceable. One problem, that is because Russians provide very limited assistance. And new units starting to get into China starting to see from the November to October. But the true unit designated for the Korean operation is sent to China in the December. And one of the story that here is that one Russian MiG division usually equipped with 120 MiGs. And one problem Russians come across that they have a shortage of the planes. So they have to break up that one normal air division into the two. So which means they're going to send one division to China only half strength of a normal unit. So 60 aircraft as one division. So, and those were sent to the China, they have an order from starting. That is, they only provide air defense in the rail. So they were restricted to go further down into the territory of North Korea. Second, Russian Air Force not ordered to cooperate with the Chinese ground operations. So no cooperation between Russian Air Force and the Chinese ground operations. What kind of allies you try to think about that is? Another problem and both the Russians and Chinese encountered was the short range of the MiG-15s. Since the MiG-15s cannot fly deep into the North Korean territory. And during my research, I tended to understand that each time when the MiG-15 take off from the airfield on the Chinese side of Yalu River, they can just take a circle patrol and come back in an hour. Not longer than that. And I just told the people from the museum at lunch, I said that at the end, there were 800 Chinese pilots baptized in the air combat in Korea. But how many really actually saw the enemy plane? Perhaps not many. I interviewed a few pilots. They told me that if you were lucky enough, you see the enemy plane during your patrol. You see, okay, you saw them. The second luck enough for them is you could fire shots at them. Now think about whether you hit them or not. Fire a shot, and then you come back, the ground crew said, oh, your plane have opened the fire because of the smoke on the fuselage. That will be a good sign because you are engaged in combat. And so the short range of the MiG-15 is another problem for Chinese to think about implement their plan, which I said earlier. And because the Chinese finally realized that, they are unable to put those airfields serviceable. And they are unable to send their air units into North Korea. So they cannot provide direct air support for the ground operations. And General Peng also become very angry about that. And at the time, Mao asked him to launch the sixth offensive campaign. If you study the Chinese side of the Korean War experience, they already have five offensive campaigns and launched, which pushed the UN forces on the other side of 38 parallel. But when the UN forces hold the line, starting to push back the communist forces back to the 38th line, to hold that line, and the opponents starting to think about a sixth offensive campaign. And when he designed that campaign, he expected air support. By June, I think by July, perhaps by August, the schedule pushed back, and from April to May, then June started raining season, and nothing can be done, and pushed back to August and September. By that time, he realized that his sixth offensive campaign was unrealistic because he won't have air support. And so he decided to cancel that. And you can see that this airfield has been repeatedly bombed by B-29. This is the map shows your Chinese air operation, the range, and I maybe come back to this a little bit later. Okay. This map shows a big alley. No Chinese air operations. As I mentioned earlier, Chinese intervention in the air war in Korea has three stages. And first one, we talk really about preparations. It's a very long period of time of preparation, and from November all the way up to the September 1951. And then the second stage is from September 1951 to the early, I try to think about it as January or February 1952, as what we call learning period. And then, finally, from that time to the end of the war, they call full engagement. During the early stage, they expect Soviet assistance, which means that each time their squadrons take off behind the Russian flights. And in the early stage, they also tended to fly large formations with 16 planes together. I tried to think about and why was that during my research. And number one is old tactic they learned from World War II. Number two, perhaps the young Chinese pilot would feel more secure if they have 16 planes all together flying over the enemy-controlled space, airspace. That was a very sad story at one occasion. Right? I believe there are more patrols and over the North Korea's airspace, and they came across nothing. Once they came across the UN forces or F-86, that would be a bad day for them. And on one occasion, one formation, 16 formation, lost, I think, 6 to 7 planes just in one battle. Very, very, very bad in that. And so you just basically become slaughtered by skillful UN forces. And then after the period of time of Soviet tutelage, and they become called the independent operations. So they would fly them on. Okay. But later they do develop a technique themselves, feel that more edgy, more maneuverable, more operationable is have a 4 planes as a 1 flight and flying at a different altitude and together. And so that will be a more operational or more better way and to do things. And the second, so that is the theory Chinese came out after the Korean War. That is, Air Force did not strive for their own victory. Air Force would take the ground victory as their own. Do you follow that? So Air Force no need to make any efforts for victory. As long as the ground troops can hold their territory, hold their position, and defeat the enemy, it is their victory. This is the mentality grown out from that war experience I will go tell you later. So they concentrate on defending the key transportation lines. This is also very important. I want to show you, give you the significance later, right? And at this point, you just remember this, and they're assigned to defend the key transportation lines. So they never have air support for the ground operations, and so they're taking the ground victory as the air defense, air forces victory. At the end, China claimed it had shot down 330 UN aircraft. It lost 231 of its own aircraft. And in their claims, majority of those are F-86. I'll come back to justify this later, okay? And there are a few cases I would like to show how the Chinese made that claim, and that will come back what the justification. Okay. The first case, talk about Zhang Jihui and George Davis. I don't know how many of you really know who is George Davis. He's a major, he's one of the well-known Air Force aides and in Korean War. Try to see where is the photo. Oh, here we go. This is the when I wrote my book, and one of the Korean War veteran sent his photo and to me, and here, where's the George? Here's George Davis, a Texan, and from Lubbock. He's very well known, right? And in the Korean War, and he had, for example, on the November 30, 1951, and he and his squadron slaughtered Chinese bomber fleet over the small North Korean island called Tawa Island. And on November 30th, and Chinese sent nine of those 2-2 bombers and to attack that island. And this is a unit where my father serviced. At the time, my father was the political commandant of the regiment. And this is the crew. This guy is my father's. He is under my father's command, and at the time, he was a group leader. And during my research, I interviewed him. Of course, on that day, what happened to him and his crews or his group become a heroic action. And I just sit there and try to listen to him, what he told me. Perhaps the same story he repeated many, many times. And on that day, he lost four of the bombers. Four. Right? And but the American claimed that they shot down nine, or the total is nine. Or five of them are injured, all of them injured, and the manager bad, but four was done. And this guy served as an escort with this propeller, a Law 11 fighters. And he was a group leader and flew in the, as I think, the nine formation. He was a leader in the front. After I interviewed him, I went back to another Korean War veteran. He's a ground crew and served with the same unit. He told me a different story about him. You never can see from the official records. And he said that when he returned, he almost collapsed. Cannot get out of the cockpit himself. And he, to some extent, he even said his pants wet. But of course, I never recorded that in my book. All right. But I tend to believe that you try to think about nine slow bombers slaughtered by a squadron of a flight of the F-86. I think the George Davis claim shot down at least three. But I said they exaggerated because, and each pass they have hit the plane, they thought the hit that must kill, and one the other wingman or another leader of the wing and come over, hit the same plane and repeatedly, and so each one make their own claim, and so on. So that shows you what the George Davis was. And the only escort the bomber has is this Law 11 and propeller fighters. And he had one shot, okay, at one of F-86. And later claimed he shot down the F-86 by propeller fighter. And during my research, I found out that he did hit that F-86, but never shut down that plane. That plane was flewed by, flewed by Lieutenant Marshall, the guy here. And the 23-millimeter cannonball hit the steel plate on the seat and locked him out. He passed out. That plane plunged almost to the sea level. He woke up and pulled the plane off. And so that's why the Chinese pilot climbed. He shot down Lieutenant Marshall. Okay. Now back to the George Davis story. George Davis was a very aggressive pilot, because he's so skillful in World War II and also in Korean War. Have a very high kill. At that time, I think he already had 6 MiG-KLs on his belt. And on that day mission, I think it's on April 12th, he's supposed to flew over the, I think, the Chongchong River and, oh, no, Dachong River, and in the Anju area. But he was not satisfied with that patrol. He told his wingman, said, let's go further. All right. I think he had six or eight. And he left the other back to the south, and he flew the further. And then he encountered and this guy. He encountered him. And then later, George Davis and claimed he shot down two MiGs on that moment in engagement. Later, he was shot down. And What later the Chinese found out that is, the boss's wreckage of the George Davis plane and his plane very nearby. And when the American media broadcast that one of their aces lost in Korea, the Chinese Air Command asked their forces to find out who got him killed. And the ground troops found the two wreckage and retrieved and the dog tag and other identifications. And they credit him for the kill. Right? And what the justification made for credit him, because the Chinese claimed that no Russians plane supposed flying over that area at that time on that day. Yes, officially made true. But unofficially, once the plane you sent off in the sky, how do you know where they are going to fly over? Right. So during my research, I tended to believe that is George Davis is truly shot down by Russians rather than by this guy. But however, he was credited by Chinese side. Because Chinese Air Force desperated, needed some heroic story to mobilize the troops. You don't want to be a leader for a troops being beaten by the other side. Am I right? So this become a perfect story for him to have a credit for the shutdown of the George Davis. But can you argue this with Chinese about this? Probably not. And the next case, then this comes down to where those Chinese Air Force heroes come from. I told the researcher from the museum that is, during my research, I feel that is, come from individual personality. And some people have an outspoken personality, talk a lot. Others do a lot, not talking a lot. So those people do a lot and never talk a lot and may never can be credited. But those maybe did not really do anything but just talk a lot, always have been credited. All right. This is the next case, and then this pilot, let's see, where is he? No, I go forward. That's him. And he claimed at one day of a mission, he shot down four F-84s. Four. I tend to believe that each time how many ammo he really left in the gun barrel and after the shot. But at the end of the day, he was shot too, be shot down too. When he rescued and come back, lucky enough, because those MiGs were shot down always over the friendly territory, they always can trip back, won't be sent to the POW camps. And so he come back, claimed that even though he was shot down, because he finished off his ammo, and so he was finally shot down. But he claimed he shot four U.S. aircraft. And I tend to believe he shot nothing, but he talked a lot. And he did credit. Okay. Again, the same story. The Chinese commanders need the good news, not the bad, always the bad news. And the next case also tried to tell you how they justify it's called Wang Hai and his flying group. And Wang Hai was considered as a Korean War hero, and also his flying group was highly credited. And Wang Hai eventually made the commander of the PLA Air Force. Where's Wang Han? No, I'm sorry. Oh, let's go to that one. Where's Wang Han's group? That is Wang Han and his flying group. And what interesting enough that is, all those people who claim they have heroes over the American pilots, they had experience being shot down. This, you see, I said Zhang Jihui was shot down. Liu Yutiu was shot down. He was shot down too. And, but nevertheless, and he has maintained a record of 4 kills and 5 injured damages. And the last case is about Han Dechai and Harold and Fisher. And perhaps only the case, I tend to believe that kill should be credited to Chinese, is this one. Right? Again, in the April 1953, at the end of the day, and U.S. pilot become more aggressive because it crossed over the Yalu, tried to, and shut down those planes and the landing and take off. And that day, and Fisher did the same thing. And he was wingman, and Fisher shot down his leader, which was landing. And in 2 encounters, because they're already in the landing pattern. Right? And but Fisher thought he shot both of the Chinese aircraft. And but actually, and he and shot down him over the Chinese airfield. But however, the Russian pilots also claim he was actually shot him down. And Fisher is interesting, repeated visit China and met him later. He was captured and stayed 2 years in Chinese prison. And this, you see that, that's one of the visits he made in his late years and in the Chinese Air Force Museum, because I can tell this. And he passed away last year. Right? I believe he has been here many, many times. And he passed away. And he really got acquainted with him. And so this is the only story I tended to believe might be should be credited and to this young fellow of that kill. Okay. How to justify the Chinese claims? They claimed shut down the 330 UN aircrafts. To me, I believe that, and most of them, the F-86, to me, I believe that is an over-exaggeration. Right? And why they did so? Number one, the political correct made those people to think they have to make that claim. Even though they said they have a very strict rule to determine the kills, for example, the gun camera evidence, other pilots' witness, a ground evidence. They said all the three should come together to verify a kill. But at the end, I believe that is, if one of the rule can be used to justify the kill, they go ahead to do that. So that's why they have very high kills, and as they claim. I believe that both sides have exaggerated the claims, but the Chinese way over what they're supposed to climb. And no one can see, can tell the truth. If anyone tried to question about whether they truly have that many F-86 been killed, and that is a big, that means you are counter against political correct. That won't serve your individual good. Okay, those are just photos. And those are the photos you can see, the mixed crews of Russians and Chinese. They are playing the soccer game. Seems they have fun, all right? And Russians only credit this pilot as a Chinese ace. But he never got too far promoted because he's not an outspoken person. You see those who are spoken, talk big and always promote it faster, have better recognition. You see this called the division commanders studying the gun camera film, try to verify the kills. That's the Russian footage, gun camera film, and to show their attack on the B-29. Okay, this photo shows the Russian crews. So the on the top, you can see they're all dressed in Chinese uniform. Right? This is the Russian crews. The Russian gun camera footage, and it shows the kills. That's it. Okay. Now, what did China gain from the war? First, Chinese Air Force expanded throughout the war. Started with 4 regiments. At the end, they have, typos, 66 regiments. And started with about 100 aircraft, and now at the end of the war, they have more than 3,000 aircraft. And they all set some 800 pilots, 58,000 ground personnel took part in operation in Korea. So, from the force size, and you can see the Chinese Air Force was growing significantly. I think that perhaps the one thing they should proud of themselves. From ground zero, nothing, to one of the largest air forces in the world. But they actually learned that it's a strong emphasis on air defense. And that is a hammer influenced, number one, by Soviet doctrine, which emphasized to gain air superiority through air defense, not through offensives, air offensives, or strategic bombing. And that is completely contradictory to the theory given by Duhay and theory made by Mitchell. So that's why for a long, long time, Chinese Air Force were built up on the concept of air defense for air superiority. So that is an institutional culture and strategic culture embedded deeply in the Chinese Air Force as a service organization. I just want you to remember this. Second, they're always discounting the role air power played in the war. Particular Chinese leaders, the Maoist especially, even his son was killed by American bombing. He did not believe the air power played a major role in the combat he could not win in Korea. And each time when the people from the Korean front come back to home, Beijing, he asked them what is really about the effect of air power. And each time he heard the last casualties on the air bombardment on his forces, and he felt released, because that proved his theory. And also strengthened his belief that a man could overcome weapons. He strongly believed that whether you have air power or not, it's not critical for him to win the war. But nonetheless, Chinese did recognize that they could not achieve the total victory because UN air superiority. And that's why they could not organize any daytime ground war, ground combat in the most part of the during the most time of the war in Korea. And another lesson they learned from that is the air power have to be used with restraints. You see that UN side never allowed the bombardment on the other side of the Yalu River. The communists never allowed the air operation beyond the 38th parallel. So one lesson seems to learn that is air power was more deterrent role, served a more deterrent role rather than offensive role. So that's why Chinese never appeared anxious to get Air Force involved in any other confrontation since the Korea they had involved. One major example is 1979 when the war broke out between China and the Vietnam, and Chinese again not use Air Force. Finally, what they got from the Korea, that is, yes, the Chinese Air Force was one of the biggest, but far from being the best. When the chief of the staff of the Air Force and claimed at that time China become an air power overnight, that is overstatement. Right? And China had a long way to go to be the air power themselves and since then. And one of the things I want to argue that the air power did have the limited role and from a Chinese perspective. For example, and they always can maintain their supply lines at night. And they did stockpile and a lot of other supplies during the war and because and which and never and strangled in the Chinese forces in the front. That's perhaps one of the reasons the war eventually have to end at the 38th parallel as it started. So that is one of the limitations about the air power. And so Korean War was really made the Chinese become obsessed with air defense. And of course, this is a mindset of also come from the so-called the nature of the People's War Doctrine. and a strong air threat from the United States. And so they feel that the best way to build up the air force is for air defense, not for offense. And the Chinese air force are not designed as a separate strike force, but subordinate armed forces. You see, that I said earlier, they took the army's victory as their own. That's one best example. And I already said, Great Lines Air Power could have escalated the conflict. So air power cannot be used and employed with a free hand. So this is the conclusion I'm going to make. And for the past 60 years today, when we think about Korean War, when we think about what the Chinese Air Force had been done, they has devoted energy and resources to developing a modern air force. But that effort has been always frustrated by the Chinese leaders' misunderstanding of the role the air force supposed to play and a misunderstanding of the experience the air force had in Korean War and later the homeland air defense operations during the Cold War. So their misunderstanding of by ignorance the actual role of the air force, air power, can play. And I said at the very beginning, that is, Chinese side of the story about air combat in Korea and later and was unbroken string of the victory and heroism. I never dared to challenge you about that myself. But however, few have dared question the legitimacy of this record and stories. That's really sad signs about themselves. Sometimes I talk to the Chinese Air Force officers. I say, if you really want to be a grown-up in terms as an air power country, you have to recognize the truth about yourself. Until then, you never can be fully grown. And so those are common not only to the distortions but also to self-delusion that perpetuate the view of Chinese air power as defense or deterrence force. So that's why I said what Korean War experience means to Chinese Air Force. That means that they always consider themselves more like defense forces than offensive forces. Play a deterrence role rather than for offensive role. So today, Chinese Air Force adopted a new doctrine called the Chinese Air Force must be go both offensive and defensive. But unless they truly understand what offensive means to the air power, as long as the defensive emphasis remained part of the doctrine, I don't think it will fully become offensive air force. That's my views. And although the speed of the Chinese aerospace modernization has caused concern in the West, progress is always likely to be constrained by the technological limitation of the Chinese defense industry and by resources needed to support modernization. That's true, right? But more important, perhaps even more important, essential, is that the aerospace transformation will continue to be tempered by inherent differences in the institutional culture of the PLA ground forces and the PLAF. So people ask me, what is the true problem for the Chinese Air Force for its modernization? I told my students at Edward College, I said, it is institutional culture of the Air Force. Because that institutional culture inherited from Korea as a defense force rather than offensive force. My next article I'm going to write, and for the RAND organization, that is, what growth of the air power in China today has any impact on Chinese leadership decision in the future. I will perhaps go with this line of argument. That is, for forces never think itself to be used as an offensive force ever in their own history or their own experience. And to what extent, at the time which arise to the point they want to use the Air Force as an offensive weapon? What is a gut feeling they can come out to believe that service, armed service, can do the job offensively? Because they had no such institutional culture ever developed themselves. So to me, the development of the institutional culture will take much, much longer time. To be a service, to embrace both offensive and defensive capability as an independent strategic force. So that is the true challenge for the Chinese Air Force to face today and the near future. That is why the study of the Chinese air combat experience in Korea is very important. It's critical.